the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, February 6th, 2025. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid of the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get this blogcast launched properly with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. And today's datagram comes to us from none other than the late, great Albert Einstein, who said, "An expert is a man that has made all mistakes possible in a narrow field of expertise." Which explains the term government experts.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
I'm excited.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
I know.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Cool.
Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Really?
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. All right, kids. Oh, I'm a believer. Sure. It'll happen someday. All right, kids. It was on this day in 1959, Jack Kilby of Texas Instruments filed the first patent for an integrated circuit. Thanks to his idea, we're all slaves to our cell phones and any one of a number of other electronic devices that we'd be lost without. How insane is all this? And it was on this day in 1978, the blizzard of 1978, one of the worst nor'easters in New England history, hit the region up there with sustained winds of 65 miles an hour and snowfall of 4 inches an hour. Whew! Yeah, they had snowflakes the size of basketballs, and your snot would freeze right on the end of your nose.
You gotta be kidding me!
There's a publication on the internet called I Stand for Freedom, and I don't know much about the structure of this outfit, but they seem to be a conservative outlet. There's a fellow by the name of Noah Stanton who writes for them, and he wrote that Republican leadership faces another challenging moment as internal party tensions resurface at a critical time. I read that opening line and I thought, what? Really? You were a witness to the November election, weren't you? And he went on to say the conservative movement's strength has always depended on unity and shared purpose, particularly when facing opposition from the left. Yet some establishment figures seem determined to reignite old conflicts. As conservatives nationwide rally behind strong America First policies, certain voices from within continue to undermine party cohesion. So then he goes into this little dissertation about how Mitch McConnell appeared on 60 Minutes. Well, why wouldn't 60 Minutes want Mitch McConnell on? I mean, if you're drawing breath, you understand that Mitch McConnell doesn't like, didn't like, and never will like Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell used to be the butt of a lot of jokes from the late Rush Limbaugh. That's how far back this goes. That's McConnell's rhino ship. Let's call it what it is, rhino ship. Not the only rhino either, but we're going to deal with Mitch McConnell right now because this is a guy who appeared on 60 Minutes. And 60 Minutes, of course, is going to want to have people like Mitch McConnell over the next 4 years to appear on their program because it's the mainstream media's job. They have taken it upon themselves to be the supreme critics of the Republican Party and anything having to do with true conservatism. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that somebody like Democrat John Fetterman of Pennsylvania would end up persona non grata with the mainstream media. Because Fetterman actually is a bit of a Democrat activist in terms of thinking along the lines of common sense. See, common sense has all of a sudden become very popular with the American people, but it will never be popular with the mainstream media. And again, let me run down the laundry list of the mainstream media. You got your ABC, you got your CBS, your NBC, your MSNBC, which is hanging on by a thread. You've got your New York Times, your Washington Post, and other like-minded publications. So when you see 60 Minutes trotting these old relics, these old rhinos out, it's nothing more than CBS's feeble attempt to further stain the GOP. Now, every political party is always going to have division. The Democrats have had it for decades. So have the Republicans. But right now, in the wake of this amazing election, and with Donald Trump working so quickly that it's actually impossible to keep up with the man at the moment on a day-to-day basis, almost impossible to keep up with him, and his moves are very deliberate. They've been well thought out over the last 4 years. It's not like he hasn't had time to prepare for it. He has. That's become very obvious. And that's good for all of us. I mean, look at how he's put Mexico and Canada at bay. Basically said, look, I'm playing hardball, and you can either play with me or you can play against me. Play against me, you'll lose. And this is something you got to love about Donald Trump. The man is not messing around. And he's not messing around with the media either. I thought it rather comical the other day. Joy Behar of The View and Whoopi Goldberg were criticizing, well, they were barbecuing Donald Trump's new press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, who is absolutely awesome. And their criticism was, oh, the only reason Donald Trump hired her as press secretary is because she's hot. Really? Have you seen the woman at work? My God. KJP couldn't hold a candle to Caroline Leavitt on Leavitt's worst day. That's how good she is. She's very good. She's every bit as good as Kayleigh McEnany was. And she speaks and carries herself with the confidence of a sleepwalker, which is something else you have to like. So anyhow, this guy, Noah Stanton, writing in I Stand for Freedom, kind of went on and on and on, outlining how the 60 Minutes visit with Mitch McConnell delved with the fact that McConnell and Trump haven't spoken for quite a while. McConnell told Leslie Stahl, he says, well, we haven't spoken for quite a while. I was very upset about what happened January 6th. Oh, yeah, you were very upset about it because you're a rhino. And rhinos, in particular, rhinos are right alongside the Democrats when it comes to trying to blame Donald Trump for what happened on January 6th. And what the world doesn't seem to want to understand, what that world, the leftist world, doesn't seem to want to understand about January 6th is that what happened there was organic. And then it was egged on by federal plants. People, agents, call them what you want, who were placed there deliberately to create a situation whereby the Democrats could blame any rioting, any obstruction of the normal flow of things on vote confirmation day on Donald Trump. And they're still trying to do it. They haven't given up on that. They're still at it. I don't think they're ever going to give up on that. So let me read a paragraph here from this guy, Noah Stanton's article. He says, McConnell's comments went beyond mere disagreement, veering into territory that many conservatives might find troubling. When pressed about his views on January 6th, the senator maintained his stance that it was an insurrection, parroting language commonly used by the left. And he's right on target there. That's exactly what McConnell's going to go to his grave, and it could be any day now, believing that it was an insurrection. Well, if you look at the facts, you look at what actually happened and how it happened, and then you look at the definition of the word insurrection, what happened on January 6th was not an insurrection in any way, shape, or form. So just be aware of the fact that over the next 4 years, the mainstream media is going to trot out every rhino they can get their fingers on, put them in front of a camera and a microphone, and use them to try to stain the current Republican Party. But you know what? The beauty of that idea is they do it at their own peril, the media. It's going to blow up in their faces. I think just about the best thing on television these days is on the Fox News channel, and that's Greg Gutfeld's program, and it's just simply titled Gutfeld. Excellent show. If you've never seen it and you don't get the Fox News channel, just go to YouTube and type in Gutfeld. That's G-U-T-F-E-L-D. And just watch the stuff that they post there. I mean, this guy's got, I just said, the just about the best thing on television these days. Well, Tuesday night, he had an attorney by the name of Julian Epstein on the program. He's kind of a high-powered attorney, I guess you would say. He's got a lot of government, federal government experience. Let me read a little bit of his self-published bio. It says, Attorney Julian Epstein brings over 15 years of Capitol Hill experience to APCO. And APCO, I don't know what that is. I'll have to find that out. But anyway, he says, serving as the former chief counsel for the House Judiciary Committee and previously as chief of staff for the House Government Reform Committee. Julian was chief counsel during the momentous impeachment proceedings in 1998 and was lead counsel for numerous telecommunications, intellectual property, antitrust, counterterrorism, civil rights, and other legislation. He's a frequent guest on the television talk show circuit, appearing regularly on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News Channel, and NBC. His published works appear in law journals, The Washington Post, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and various magazines. So it appears to me that he's able to straddle the that fine line between liberalism and conservatism. And of course, as you may have noticed, conservatism seems to be winning these days. Well, he was on Gutfeld's program, this guy Julian Epstein. Really didn't know anything about the guy until Tuesday night. So Tuesday he was on the Gutfeld program, and he lent some very interesting insight to the conversation, which was all about all the things that Donald Trump has accomplished in just a couple of weeks he's been our president. The man is moving at a breakneck pace. It's almost impossible now for me to put together a laundry list of the accomplishments of Donald Trump in just 2 weeks as president, a little over 2 weeks. But anyhow, Greg Gutfeld asked this guy, Julian Epstein, what he thought about this whole thing. And he gave some really interesting insight.
How do the Democrats deal with this? Because you keep hearing that they're kind of overwhelmed.
Democrats deal with this the same way they've been dealing with almost everything else the last 10 years, which is a lot of contempt, a lot of disdain, and a lot of ad hominem name calling. Mm-hmm. When you swim in a culture long enough, you don't notice the culture. Mm-hmm. But this is all the Democrats stand for. They don't build anything anymore. It used to be a party that built things. Mm-hmm. Look at what happened in Los Angeles. Look at what happened with the train system here in New York. Supposed to be done in 2009, started in 2009, still hasn't started. Democrats have lost the ability to build, and all they do is sort of complain and issue contempt citations. It's about all they do. Trump, on the other hand, this has been remarkable what he's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, it shows that he does what he promised he would say he would do, which is very refreshing for American people. It shows an incredible business-like efficiency, and it shows strength. Mm-hmm. You know, like him or hate him, Donald Trump is a strong guy, and even a very strong guy and a strong leader, and even when there were lots of sort of complaints, even from places like the Wall Street Journal and conservative quarters about tariffs, he doesn't back down. And American people like somebody that doesn't back down. So it's quite a contrast between strength on the one hand showed by Trump and contempt by the Democrats, which the American people don't like.
Right on the money there. I mean, I've mentioned that a few times myself over the last several years. The Democrats are always tearing things down. They're always criticizing. They're never, ever bringing anything to the table that's constructive. Something that we Americans could all hang our hats on and say, yeah, let's get behind this. Let's make our country better. The Democrats offer absolutely nothing. So I thought that was a very interesting analysis on the part of Julian Epstein, an attorney who's obviously been circulating around Washington and the New York media sphere for decades. Here again in the bio, it says Epstein brings over 15 years of Capitol Hill experience to APCO. I'm going to have to look up APCO and find out who they are. But I found the entire exchange, which was just a couple of minutes there on the Gutfeld program. I found it very revealing. I hope people were paying attention to that, because here again, that's the difference between the Democrat mind and the conservative mind. Because I'm not going to call it a Republican mind. I mean, this is not a Republican movement. It is a conservative movement, and it managed to manifest itself within the GOP. But this is not a GOP movement. Not yet. It's going to end up there. I mean, when you have somebody for a vice president like J.D. Vance, a fellow who at one time opposed Donald Trump, and when you've got people like Tulsi Gabbard on board and RFKJ, then something very organic is happening here. It's not a party line anymore. It's a movement. It's a conservative movement. And when it comes to the GOP, tag, you're it. You're the party that's going to carry this banner, whether you like it or not. And so then you've got your Liz Cheney's and your Mitch McConnell's. And what's his former vice president? Anyhow, you've got these people over there now who are flirting with the left because obviously they don't fit into the GOP anymore. Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney. These people now are has-beens. Their political careers, for all intents and purposes, are over. And it's just as well, because that benefits the American people. To say that President Trump is bold in his moves is really a gross understatement. Tuesday, he said that the U.S. would take over Gaza and remove debris, tunnels, and explosives left there by Hamas after the war with Israel, adding that he saw America taking a long-term ownership position.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job, do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
Now, the announcement was a surprise, and it came as Trump spoke alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the first foreign leader, by the way, to visit Trump since his inauguration last month. And Trump had previously said that he would like to see most or all of the Palestinian population of Gaza moved to another Arab or Muslim country. Now, the idea of actually taking over Gaza and establishing a U.S. presence was both unexpected and completely new. And Trump also added that the U.S. would develop Gaza economically, sending troops if necessary and making investments. And he called the potential of Gaza unbelievable, but said that Palestinian control of Gaza will never work. And he added, you have to learn from history. We have an opportunity to do something phenomenal, the Riviera of the Middle East. Well, he said that he envisioned the world's people living there, adding, I think you'll make Gaza into an international, unbelievable place. I think the potential in the Gaza Strip is unbelievable, and I think the entire world, representatives from all over the world, will be there. Now, here again, you're watching the mind of a real estate developer at work here. It's very fascinating for me because I admire people who build things. Now, a reporter asked Trump what right the U.S. had to take over Gaza, calling it inaccurately sovereign territory. There is no Palestinian state. Seriously, there is no Palestinian state and no sovereign power in the territory. Okay, so here you had a reporter who is ill-educated. So Trump didn't reply directly, but said that American control of Gaza would increase stability in the region as the various nations pursued peace together. Great concept. Now, come on, admit it. This is a very hard thing to take issue with. Now, Netanyahu had never publicly advocated for anything like what Trump proposed, said that the idea was something that could change history and that it was worth considering. Now, it's considered taboo, even in Israel, to advocate for the transfer of Palestinians from Gaza or from Judea and Samaria, also known as the West Bank. And Trump has previously proposed buying Greenland. You know all about that now. So he's not averse to the idea of America taking over territory abroad. I don't know if you could call this empire building. It's certainly influence building. And when you look at the kind of a world that Donald Trump sees in his mind's eye, it looks like a pretty good world. But the idea of taking over war-torn Gaza is completely unique. It's quite possibly revolutionary. God only knows what that's going to cost. But then again, if you look at Gaza and the situation currently, and you look at it through Donald Trump's mind's eye, the eye of a real estate developer, you know, what comes with it? Peace. One of America's greatest political embarrassments, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer went full cringe earlier this week as he delivered a chant of "We will win" at an anti-Trump protest. Now, Schumer had attended the rally alongside various members of Congress to oppose Trump giving billionaire ally Elon Musk access to the federal government, namely the U.S. Treasury. And Schumer exclaimed in a raspy voice, "I'm going to stand with you in this fight, and we will win." And then he started chanting, you know, "We will win, we will win." And then he awkwardly grabbed Representative Maxine Waters' hand and held it up in the air. I mean, here again, just those two alone kind of illustrates the rogues gallery that was in attendance here. And according to Business Insider, three federal employee unions have accused the Treasury Department of giving Elon Musk's Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE, unlawful access to sensitive information. Now, they added, in a lawsuit filed Monday, lawyers acting for the Alliance for Retired Americans, the American Federation of Government Employees, and the Service Employees International Union, you know them, right? That's the SEIU, and that's the union that Glenn Beck 20 years ago was warning us about. All right. Here again, it's like I said in yesterday's podcast. When we started allowing government workers to unionize, that's when we started to commit a slow suicide in this country. So anyhow, they're saying that let me go back up to the top of this paragraph here. It says, in a lawsuit filed Monday, lawyers acting for the Alliance for Retired Americans, the American Federation of Government Employees, and the SEIU said Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, violated federal law when he shared the department's data with DOGE. Federal laws protect sensitive personal and financial information from improper disclosure and misuse, including by barring disclosure to individuals who lack a lawful and legitimate need for it. In his first week as Treasury Secretary, Defendant Bessent violated these restrictions. Well, Trump told reporters this week that he gave Musk access to Treasury data as a means to identify wasteful government spending. But see, this is the whole game that the Democrats are playing. They're trying to prevent us from trimming the government back. Again, I mentioned, what was it, yesterday, that our government is the nation's single largest employer. Our government is huge. Now, Trump said that in defense of his opening up these files, he said he's got access only to letting people go that he thinks are no good if we agree with him. And it's only if we agree with him. So basically, he's outlining Elon Musk's role in this as an advisor, a consultant. Nothing Elon Musk has been given to do is binding. Please understand that. All right. So Trump added, he says, Elon can't do and won't do anything without our approval. And we'll give him the approval where appropriate. And then White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt. Did I ever mention how good she is? Anyhow, Caroline Leavitt likewise told reporters that Musk had abided by all applicable federal laws as a special government employee, which is true. But here again, this whole idea of Chuck Schumer out there, we will win, we will win. And you've got smaller players from the Democrat Party. There's one legislator over there in New Jersey who's declaring war against Donald Trump. You know, this is very counterproductive, of course. You know, that word counterproductive really falls so short of what it really is. But this is how these people intend to play. They are suffering from full tilt boogie Trump derangement syndrome, and they're not taking it very well. Let's head on over to the comedy corner with a fellow who's been here before, Chris Young.
My parents are getting older. They're doing older, crazy parent things. My dad, he was one of the cheapest guys I know. Anyone here have a cheap parent? Yeah, right. All right. To be fair, my dad was kind of cheap. He was the kind of cheap that when I used to say, hey, Dad, can we stop for ice cream after Little League Baseball, would say, we don't need to stop for ice cream. We have ice cream at home. Yeah, people, we did not have ice cream at home. What we had was we had an old refrigerator that froze the milk on the top shelf. Throw in some Nestle Quick Boy and chip at it with the hammer, you'll have ice cream. Yeah. My dad, he's in his 70s though. In his 70s, he went out and bought a $68,000 Lincoln. Yeah, he paid cash for it. So now I know why we couldn't stop for ice cream all those years. It's cool, yeah. No, my dad, like I said, he's in his 70s. And you know what those Lincolns are? They're these great big behemoths of a vehicle. They got this big screen TV in the dashboard. They got a camera on the back. And I said, well, that's great, Dad. Now you can watch all the stuff you're going to back over. He did it too. I knew it was coming. We're sitting at my parents' house at Christmas dinner. My dad eats like he always does, real fast. He jumps up. He goes running out to the garage. I hear this truck fire up, and the next sound that I heard was crunch, crunch, crunch. Yeah, I went running out to the garage, and I looked, and there underneath the axle of this truck was the brand new Barbie big wheel power wheel thing that he had just bought his granddaughter for Christmas. Yeah, I said, Dad, did you not just see that big wheel power wheel thing on that big screen TV inside your dashboard? And he goes, well, yeah, but you know me, I don't believe everything I see on TV.
Have a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change. free lunch or too much horsepower, and you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.